Albert Mohler Program, your place for intelligent Christian conversation about the issues that matter. Dr. Mohler is president of the Southern Baptist Theological Seminary and one of the nation's leading theologians and cultural commentators. To get online with Dr. Mohler, call toll-free nationwide, 1-877-893-TALK. That's 1-877-893-8255. Now, here's your host, Dr. Albert Mohler.
Hello, America. Welcome to the Albert Mohler Program, broadcasting you again live now from Louisville, Kentucky. It's good to be back here. It's good to be in conversation with you today. And I want to ask you a very, very interesting question. Is it right to put women and children first if you're on a sinking ship? That's not just a hypothetical question. Interesting media coverage in recent days having to do with a study published in the Proceedings of the American Academy of Science, having to do with a comparison between the sinkings of the Titanic and the Lusitania. And the difference is very, very interesting, because if you were on the Titanic and you were a woman or a child, you had a much better chance of surviving than if you were on the Lusitania. Now, we're going to be looking at the argument made in this article about why women and children fared better on the Titanic. But the interesting thing is that almost all the conversation about this is that certainly it is right that a man, young men in particular, should do their very best to protect women and children. And if there are scarce places on the lifeboat, giving way as men to women and children is simply right. Now, here's the question. How do you defend that in a feminist age? I mean, if there really is no gender distinction, and there is no distinction of order or of custom or of priority between men and women, why should a man give up his place on a lifeboat to a woman? In other words, even if you're a feminist, you got to wish you were on the Titanic rather than on the Lusitania, because women are far more likely to have survived the sinking of the Titanic than the Lusitania, because, as it turns out, men rushed the lifeboats on the Lusitania, and young men had a great advantage to get on those lifeboats and those very few seats as that ship was sinking very, very fast, just about 18 minutes. But on the Titanic, a different sense of order set in. We're going to be talking about that today on the Albert Mohler Program. It's a fascinating question. And from a Christian worldview perspective, I'm just going to tell you, you bet it's right for women and children to be first. It's a man's responsibility to take care of women and children. It is the responsibility of the strong to take care of the weak. But even beyond that, it is, with reference not just to children and adults, but rather even to men and women, it's important that men do what is right. Is that just a socially constructed idea? Is that just a matter of etiquette or custom that a man should say women and children first? I don't think so. There's a deep moral knowledge there. And I think even those who want to insist that there's no distinction between men and women know there is a moral knowledge there. They really don't want to deny. I also think they don't want to talk about it, which is why this particular set of news stories in the media that I wrote about at my website last Friday at albertmohler.com is really interesting. I published the article entitled Women and Children First, A Tale of Two Ships. I left it up at the very top of the webpage today so that you could find it easily. Just go to albertmohler.com. That's M-O-H-L-E-R.com, and you'll find it. And we're going to have a fine conversation about this. The phone number, 877-893-8255. That's 877-893-TALK. Write us at mail@albertmohler.com. And, of course, I hope you're following us at Twitter and Facebook, at Facebook, the Albert Mohler Program, at Twitter. Best way to follow it is just /Albert Mohler, no space. And you can sign up to follow Mohler Radio as well. And it's fun stuff there. During the day, I post most days lots of stuff directing you to things I think you'll find of interest. Let's get right to some interesting things at the top of the news. Very interesting report out. The journal Pediatrics is indicating that births have now risen in all age groups in the United States. So there is something here of a spike of births. By the way, how many babies were born in the United States in the year 2007? That's the year that is being recorded here. That's 4,317,119. That's right. 4 million babies, a little bit more, 4,317,119. A lot of good news here. It looks like in spite of the birth dearth in many countries, declining birth rate in many especially advanced economies, Europe in particular, although, by the way, the lowest birth rate in the world right now is South Korea. But just jumping over that issue and looking to the United States, there's a lot of good news in this report. There is obviously a good respect and love for babies here, a good desire and respect to see the family and to see children come and be received as gifts. There's only one problem. I read you this one paragraph. I'm reading it in toto in the report from the New York Times. Births to unmarried women in 2007 increased to the highest levels ever measured, rising 4% just over the previous year of 2006. Almost 40% of all births were to unmarried women. So there is troubling news in this as well. You know, the reality is that the first impulse is to respond to this with a sense of deep moral concern, because after all, this is not what God gave us the gift of sex and reproduction for. He gave it to us for marriage. But beyond the moral concern, there's also just a very practical concern. We do know that children born to unmarried mothers have a far higher chance, boys in particular, of not finishing school, of being unhealthy, of not living to adulthood, and of being incarcerated, and all kinds of deleterious effects. God intended children to have a mother and a father. And here you have one statistic in the midst of a basically very positive scenario that is deeply troubling. Speaking of deeply troubling, the New York Times also had a story out Friday. Here's the headline. At least 36 took lives under new suicide law. Dateline is Seattle, because it was in that state that last year was the first year of Washington State's new physician-assisted suicide law. The report came out last Thursday. As mandated by state law, it looks like 36 terminally ill persons took advantage of the law, and 63 persons filed the prescriptions, the permission, in other words, for physician-assisted suicide legalized there in Washington. And out of the 63, 36 eventually took the drugs. This particular article by William Yardley says a total of 63 people filled prescriptions for lethal medication, but not everyone took it. All those who did take it died. Some people who did not take it died from other causes. Now, the report from Oregon, its neighboring state, also came out last week. Oregon has had an assisted suicide law since 1998. 95 prescriptions were filled in the period 1998 to 2009, a total of 460 patients have committed suicide and physician-assisted suicide under the law in Oregon. Now, here's what I want you to hear. The proponents of this kind of physician-assisted suicide being legalized will tell you that it is, A, only for terminally ill people, and B, that it is always restricted to those who are not only terminally ill, but at the last stages of their terminal illness. And that is the way it's often justified, with the proponents of this kind of law often say that. But when you look at these reports, it turns out differently. I want to read to you, and again, this is coming from the New York Times. This is not coming from a newsletter from some pro-life organization. This is coming from the New York Times. This is what it says. 10 patients, this is from Washington State, said they were concerned about being a burden on their family and friends. 11 cited pain, and one said finances were an issue. Now, that's scary stuff. Just consider that again. That 10 of the patients, you're talking about 36, 10 of them said they were concerned about being a burden on their family and friends. You know, that's not an irrational thought, is it? It's really not. I mean, if you were at the last stages of life and you knew that you were consuming vast amounts of the family's wealth and sustenance in terms of medical care, that would certainly be on your mind. But, you know, that's where someone has to step in and say, that's what a family is for. A family is not to avoid spending those funds. It is to be there in order to take care of each other. And so what we have here is physician-assisted suicide, which is legalized suicide, which is now putting the moral imperative upon someone who's terminally ill. Maybe you need to get yourself out of the way. No sane and civilized and moral society does that. And yet here in the United States, we have not only Oregon and Washington now with physician-assisted suicide in the Northwest. There are other efforts. Physicians in Connecticut have filed a lawsuit seeking to have permission. Lawmakers in Massachusetts are considering a physician-assisted suicide measure. And you can imagine how this kind of logic spreads from state to state. It's not the logic of life. It is the logic of death. Of course, last week, big news was made in Washington, D.C., when the nation's capital joined five other states in legalizing same-sex marriage. We now have numbers. The numbers are that in a typical day in Washington, D.C., there had been previously 10 licenses. By late Wednesday afternoon of last week, the first day, more than 140 couples had filed to be married. Because of a mandatory waiting period, couples will not be able to marry in the city of Washington, D.C. until tomorrow. So tomorrow is a big wedding day. And what we have here again is a major assault upon the fundamentals of civilization. What we have here is an attack that subverts marriage. It's not packaged that way, is it? No, it's presented to the public as an act of kindness. But what we need to recognize here is that when a society loses track of what marriage is, when we lose track of the basic logic of marriage, when we have lost sense of what marriage isn't all we lose. We lose an entire train of moral thought, of which marriage is an essential part. We lose a very important part of moral knowledge that is necessary for everyday life. And we actually make it almost difficult to talk about marriage anymore, because even as you're having a conversation with your children, for the first time in human history, you're talking in a time when this entire civilization is no longer agreed on something as basic as what marriage is. We're going to come back to talk about feminists and the challenge of women and children first, the Titanic, the Lusitania, and a whole lot more. You're listening to the Albert Miller Program. Welcome back to the Albert Miller Program. I'll admit, ever since I was a kid, I've been fascinated with the story of the Titanic, and that's true for an awful lot of Americans. As a matter of fact, I discovered something in recent days that I really didn't know, and that is how controversial the Titanic account really is. In other words, this is sort of like the people who are ready to argue about the Warren Commission report until way into the early hours of the morning. The folks that you didn't even know until you got into the conversation are loaded for action on this particular issue. By the way, I saw someone writing the other day about having met with former President Gerald Ford in his home there in Palm Springs, California, and the president took him into his private office and he said, "Here is the mail that came this week about my presidency." It was about 6 or 7 inches tall. Then he pointed to a stack of mail that was 4 feet tall, and he said, "That's the mail that came this week about the Warren Commission into the assassination of President Kennedy." A lot of Americans forget that former President Gerald Ford, as a congressman, was on that committee. In other words, it's controversial territory. Lots of folks are arguing about what it means, what happened, and whether or not there's a cover-up. Well, the Titanic is very similar, too. And, you know, it's interesting. The day after the Academy Awards, I need to tell you that if you've seen the movie Titanic, the James Cameron film, you are not watching history. You are not watching anything close to history. And the one thing almost everyone who knows anything about the Titanic knows, when it comes to the actual story, well, it was missing a lot. And a lot of it, of what was in the movie was not particularly authentic, even as people found it fascinating, especially the special effects necessary to make the sinking look realistic. But the people on board the Titanic knew that it was all too real. And as a matter of fact, what you're talking about there is, of course, the loss of 1,517 lives in the night and the morning of April 14, 15, 1912. The RMS Titanic has become a parable of modernity, the limits of technology, and the hubris of humanity. The unsinkable ship sank after an unfortunate incident with an iceberg in the North Atlantic. So the sinking of the Titanic goes down in lore. And this is what we do know. We do know that on the Titanic, there was a long period between the striking of the iceberg and the sinking. The Titanic took hours to sink, leaving time for a remarkable human drama on board the sinking ship. Now, there's more going on here. There was another ship that also sank in relatively the same time. You're talking about 3 years almost apart. May 7, 1915, the RMS Lusitania was sunk. It didn't sink because it hit an iceberg. It was sunk by a German U-boat, by a torpedo. And the loss of life was frightening, even though the total number of those dead from the Lusitania was slightly less than the Titanic, the percentage of those on board who died was far greater. In the case of the Lusitania, 1,198 of 1,959. So you're talking about a tremendous tragedy. Now, there's more that that has to do here. And oh, and by the way, it turns out that the rates were about the same by the time it was all taken in consideration. But the bottom line is that what went on board was very different. On board the Lusitania, young men got the few places that were available on the lifeboats before the ship sank. On the Titanic, at least in a large part, it was women and children first. Now, this is where the controversy enters in. I'm just going to tell you I know about the controversy. That's not the topic of the program. There are all kinds of things that factor in here. How much do the people on the Titanic know? There were class divisions on the Titanic. There are big questions about the Lusitania. All I'm telling you is that's not the topic. the topic is this whole idea of women and children first. This new study that has just come out, published in the Proceedings of the National Academy of Science, looks at the difference between the Titanic and Lusitania. And what this particular study argues is that Lusitania went down so quickly that there was no time for a sense of moral order to set in. So instead, those who were most physically able rushed the lifeboats and got in, saved themselves, young men in particular. As this report says, young men have a physical advantage to fight for places on a lifeboat. And if they are going to elbow women and children out of the way, they've got an advantage to do it. The physical advantage. The bottom line is that if you were a woman or a child, you were much more likely to survive if you were on the Titanic than if you were on the Lusitania. That's just incontrovertibly true. Now, the why question, well, that's where there's all kinds of controversy. But the fact that it's true, well, no one can argue with the facts. But here's the interesting question, because my question is not the question addressed by the Proceedings article from the National Academy of Sciences. They're interested in why. They're looking at a scientific explanation for why human beings behaved as they behaved on these two ships. I'm going to tell you, I find a far more interesting question to be this. Is it morally right that we should give preference to women and children over men in a situation like this? Should men give up their places on a lifeboat for women and children? I think the obvious answer to that is yes. I think there is not only a sense of cultural conditioning and social etiquette, a sense of social morality that we know makes that right. I think there's a deep moral knowledge within us that is actually put there by our Creator. I think it's a part of common grace. It's a part of the moral knowledge that God has implanted within the universe. It is why we know it is right for men to protect women, and why it's right for men to protect children, and why it is wrong for men to neglect that responsibility. That just raises a host of questions, doesn't it? Because if you're a feminist, if you're a feminist, which ship do you want to be on? The Titanic or the Lusitania? Because the bottom line is, you're going to have a whole lot better chance of surviving on the Titanic than on the Lusitania. And I think this just raises a part of the parable of our modern age, or call it our postmodern age, and that is this. How is it that we have this deep moral knowledge that we know is right, and yet we're not really sure what to do with it? The phone number is 877-893-8255. Is it right to say women and children first? I'd love to hear from you. Because it seems that even the authors of this scientific article think that it would be right for that to happen. But is it actually right? Or is that just a social convention that we can do without? In a feminist age, how do we justify this? Again, the phone number is 877-893-TALK. That's 877-893-8255. You know, this gets to one of these issues, and it's not alone, where you see the modern age just cracking under the weight of its own moral confusion. We're going to be talking tomorrow about a very important issue, and it's very similar. It's even more tragic, because you're not talking about the deaths of something like 2,500 people on two ships. You're talking about the deaths of 100 million girls. We're going to be talking tomorrow about the cover story in The Economist magazine, Gendercide, 100 million missing girls. Now, again, if you're a feminist, what do you do with this? If you're pro-abortion, or you call yourself pro-choice, you say a woman ought to be able to have an abortion for any reason or no reason? What do you do with the fact that worldwide there's now an imbalance by sex selection abortion and infanticide of 100 million missing girls? Well, that's the topic for tomorrow. It's very similar. Today we're going to be talking about the Titanic, the Lusitania. Is it right to say women and children first? I'd love to hear from some out there. Because, you know, if there are some consistent feminists out there, they're going to have to say, no, there's no distance. There's no difference. There's no distinction. It should be just all people equal. Some people might say, well, adults need to take care of children. They're minors, after all. But when it comes to adults, did you see the article, by the way, suggesting that in last night's Academy Awards ceremony, it was sexist because there's a best actor and a best actress category? It should just be best actor, whether male or female. You know, I don't think they're going to go with that because I think they like all those awards. If, as a matter of fact, I think if they could come up with a third sex, they'd probably do that just to have another award to give. But in a postmodern society, how do we justify these things? Women and children first? I sure hope so. Let's make the argument. Give me a call, 877-893-8255. This is the place for intelligent Christian conversation about the issues that matter. And this is one of those issues that matters. We'll be right back with your calls on the Albert Miller Program.
listening to the Albert Mohler Program, your place for intelligent Christian conversation about the issues that matter. To get online, call toll-free 1-877-893-TALK. That's 1-877-893-8255. Or go to www.albertmohler.com. Here again is your host, Dr. Albert Mohler.
Welcome back to the Albert Mohler Program. Is it right to say women and children first? Because that is a pressing question. A new report is out in the proceedings of the National Academy of Sciences having to do with a study that compares the sinkings of the Titanic and the Lusitania. The bottom line is, regardless of why and the circumstances, the reality is if you are a woman or a child, you are much more likely to survive the Titanic than the Lusitania, because on the Lusitania, younger men, stronger men, ended up in the lifeboats rather than women and children. Now, what's wrong about that? What makes what happened on the Titanic morally superior to what happened on the Lusitania? In a feminist age, I think that's a very difficult thing for people who are committed to that worldview to discuss. But this is the place where we discuss it, because I've already said what I believe. I firmly believe that knowledge that women and children should be first is not just a social convention, is not just a matter of Victorian etiquette. It is a matter of a deep moral knowledge that our Creator has put within us, and especially has put within us as men. The phone number is 877-893-TALK. That's 877-893-8255. And Baltimore, Maryland, Flex is on the line. What are you thinking, Flex?
Yeah, I just wanted to say that the notion of particularly women's first is an absolutely outdated notion. Women have achieved all levels of status in modern society, be it good and or evil. And I think that placing them on this pedestal is extremely outdated.
Okay, yeah, and I'm trying to decide, as I'm listening to you, Flex, whether you mean that to be taken at face value or whether you're trying to kind of make a point by it. So I need you to talk a little bit further. Let's say you're on the Titanic. You do not think men should give way to women in terms of the lifeboats?
If I paid for a ticket and I didn't get a discount because I'm putting myself at risk over somebody else, I absolutely have every right to that seat on a lifeboat. Absolutely.
All right, so you operationally would say women and children take care of themselves. I'm headed for the lifeboat.
I would put children first. That's why
okay.
I made that clear. I think for women to lump themselves in with the women and children notion to this at this point in society today, it should be children. It should not be women and children. They're still being pampered. It's a handicap. It's a social handicap.
Okay, I appreciate the call, and I was waiting to see if someone would make that point. And right off the bat, first caller makes the point. It's not my argument. My argument is that it would be wrong for a man not to give deference to women and children in this, because I think there's a protective knowledge that is built into us, a moral knowledge of protection that is built into us, and I think it is to the extreme subversion of society that we try to erase or minimize that. But I think the argument you just heard, as Flex just called in, and you heard it in his own voice calling for Baltimore, that is the logic that better fits the modern age. No doubt about it. He is far more in sync than am I with the modern age. And he also used a very interesting argument at the end, which I think was particularly helpful for him to make. He said, and I want to use the exact words he used, but he said more or less it's a social crutch for women to have this. It's more of a liability that this would hang over them, as I guess he would mean something of a sign of the fact that they are inherently weaker. Well, you know, that gets back to a very interesting argument I had with a feminist one time. And I've had many, but one of the interesting arguments was, who do you really need to help you in a situation where, for instance, you're being threatened by some thugs in a parking lot? Does it matter if a man walks up or if a woman walks up to help? Of course it does. In other words, there's a physical distinction. Even if you don't accept there's any kind of moral distinction, there is a physical distinction, at least in terms of the average man and the average woman. But again, let me just admit right up front, I know. You don't have to tell me that I'm out of step with the modern age. I know. Guilty as charged. I just think I'm holding to a moral knowledge without which society cannot long survive. The phone number is 877-893-8255. That's 877-893-TALK. You know, the logic of the modern age is that most distinctions of the past were wrong. You know, I can remember that argument being made very clearly by Lawrence Tribe, professor at the Harvard Law School, by Edward Kennedy, the late senator from Massachusetts, as he was arguing, you know, that these distinctions in the past are distinctions that we have overcome. And as we're moving into a more liberated, more progressive society, we simply have to overcome these distinctions. But, you know, I don't think anyone reading this article published in the Proceedings of the National Academy of Science sees it as moral progress that would be in a situation where men would just use whatever natural advantage is theirs to get to the lifeboats over women. And Flex is honest. He said adults should take care of children. But when it comes to adults, man, women, no difference. I want to know what you think. This ought to have you thinking, and it ought to have you talking. The phone number is 877-893-TALK. That's 877-893-8255. Coast to coast and with listeners around the world, you're listening to the Albert Mueller Program. Welcome back to the Albert Mueller Program. Always glad to hear from you by social media or email. Just go to Twitter, /Albert Mueller, and Facebook, the Albert Mueller Program. Denise wrote in to say, I have a feeling that if the feminists do end up looking for a place in a lifeboat, they'll be the first to tell a man to get out of the seat. Well, I don't know. I don't know. Maybe so, Denise. I have a feeling that in that situation, even if they didn't say it, they're going to be thinking it. Let's go to Suzanne calling from Louisville, Kentucky, listening on WFIA. Go ahead, Suzanne.
Dr. Mueller, I agree very strongly with what you're saying that as Christians, God has put in our heart that I believe men should protect women and children. And in the day of the Titanic, chivalry was alive and well, and that overrode any other instances. But I believe today, if it came down to the same thing happening today, it would come down to a DNA issue of who are the strongest, healthiest people, and they would be the ones allowed to get on the lifeboat.
You know, I'm afraid you're right, Suzanne, and I think, again, we sow the seeds of our own destruction in a culture or a society when we begin to accept ideas that should be recognized at face value as being subversive of the kind of moral order necessary to preserve a society. But in this case, well, we've been looking at a long rebellion against that, especially driven by ideological feminism, and I appreciate very much your call. And I'm going to go on and say that that the story of the Titanic is almost assuredly more complex than we can deal with it here, because I'm afraid on the Titanic there were probably some men who gave way to women and children of their own class, even in that rather Victorian age, and when class distinctions had everything to do not only with what kind of room you had, but where it was on the ship and how low it was below decks. That's a different issue, but admittedly, morality is just as much at play there as with the situation of women and children first and with the postmodern subversion of that morality by feminism. The phone number is 877-893-8255, 877-893-TALK. I'm afraid Suzanne is probably right that in an age that is ideologically not only influenced by but largely committed to this idea of pure gender egalitarianism, it's pretty hard to justify women and children first when in every situation imaginable you're arguing the opposite. Let's go to Jason listening on WFIA. What do you think, Jason?
I agree with you, Mr. Mueller. I believe that being a man and then taking a seat and knowing that your wife and child or your wife and children died, I mean, as far as being a man goes, I mean, I don't see how a man could, you know, handle that. Down the road or whatever, you know, just thought of it versus, you know, if the story was told from the women and children getting on the life raft and the story, you know, going that, well, you know, your dad and other men gave up their seats for you guys. I mean, that instills that into the kids.
Yeah, absolutely. You know, Jason, what you're saying here, and I appreciate very much your call, it's a basic moral knowledge that you're actually just affirming there. I think it affirms something else we need to know and articulate, and that is that there are people who are male who are of adult age who are not men. And so when you identify someone as a man, we're talking about it not just as one who is, biologically mature as a male. We're talking about one who takes on responsibility as a man and that's who deserves that. I got a very interesting email having to do with the delay of marriage and young men not getting married. And a very well-intentioned, wonderful guy wrote me an email about his daughters, and he said, here's the question, where are the guys? And I'm just getting ready to write him back, and I'm going to say, that's the wrong question. I don't want my daughter to marry a guy. I want my daughter to marry a man. Because when I say man, that means something. Not just one of the guys. I mean a stand-up kind of guy. I mean a man. And the kind of man who would do exactly what we're saying, a deep moral knowledge should tell a man to do. And I appreciate very much your call, Jason. Again, I just cannot imagine celebrating a civilization that's at war with its deepest moral knowledge. And yet that's largely where we are. Let's very quickly go to Paula, calling from Tampa, Florida, listening on WTBN. Go ahead, Paula.
Hi. I believe that it's best to have the women and children get off. And the reason I say that is back when the Titanic sailed, that was still an age of chivalry. And I think, for the most part, chivalry's kind of dead. And I think it'd be great if we could bring that back a little bit. But I also say that it's also partly, I believe, for me, my opinion, that the way God created us, man and woman, not that men cannot be nurturing, they can be. But I think, by far and away, those kind of things were very much a part of the woman's makeup, and very strongly a part of the woman's makeup when he created us. So for that reason, and I think because it's the right thing to do.
You know, it's a very interesting statement you just made, Paula, and it reminds me of a study that was done years ago, and I don't have it at hand, but I can summarize it very easily. And not only that, you don't need a scientific study. All you need is any experience with children in any kind of normal context. You say you have a child who's like 4 or 5 years old. And say he's out with mom and dad, and he falls and skins his knee. Who's he going to go to for comfort? Probably not dad first. Now, dad's going to care, but dad's kind of care is going to be, okay, let's see if it's dangerous, if it's urgent, it's not. Okay, wash it off, go out, get busy, kid. Mom's a little sweeter than that. Mom's got empathetic skills that dad doesn't have. And by the way, that's one of the reasons why a little boy needs dad, because dad needs to tell him, okay, it's all right to run to mom when you're 5. You're 15, we got a problem. Okay. Now, but on the other hand, let's get 5-year-old kid, and all of a sudden a barking dog comes up and scares him. Who does he run to? Mom or dad? Well, I know people are saying that's so stereotypical. Well, it's real, folks. It's real. Ask a 5-year-old who he's going to run to right now. And if he's standing there with mom and dad, he's going to run to dad. And he's going to consider it, by the way, dad's responsibility to protect him and mom. That's what 5-year-old little junior is going to think, because 5-year-old little junior is going to be reflecting a knowledge that is put within him. It's not just socially conditioned. It's not just socially constructed. It's not just a matter of etiquette. Paula used the word chivalry. And that refers to a specific social convention and set of conventions having to do with how men should relate to women. And that was entirely appropriate, because that's not the wrong word. And as a matter of fact, the loss of chivalry is something that costs us a great deal, costs women a great deal, and for that matter, costs men a great deal. But even where chivalry is not known as an official convention, there is this basic moral knowledge, which I think you're going to find implanted in all of God's human creatures. Just to put it bluntly, 5-year-olds anywhere know how to figure this one out. We'll be back to talk about this when we come right back on the Albert Mueller Program. Folks, I got 3 minutes and 3 calls. We're going to try to get them as quickly as possible. Baltimore, Maryland, Kathy's on the line. What are you thinking, Kathy?
Hi. I just was really thinking about the disservice that we've done to our boys through the last generation. I do see a natural protectiveness in young boys, in my own son, and how important it is that we affirm that and that we nurture that. It seems to be a God-given seed that we, in essence, teach out of them. We're so careful to make sure, and I have daughters as well, that our girls are treated equally and fairly, which is important, but it's as if that's where all the focus has gone.
Yeah.
And our boys don't know where their place is. And I see it in men. They almost are afraid to show any kind of deference to a woman because it could be offensive.
Kathy, I appreciate your call and a lot of great knowledge. I especially appreciate hearing from a mom reflecting on your own son as well as daughters. And I say, do honor what you see in that, in him. Please honor that. Call out that nobility in your son and let him know that's your expectation as well. And you'd be disappointed in him if it were otherwise. I really do appreciate that call. And I'll tell you, as a father of a son, I want him opening the door for women. I want him, you know, opening the door for his mom and for his sister. I want him concerned about those things. And I hope I do those things. And I know one man among many who'd be disappointed in me if I didn't. That'd be my own father. And woe unto the boy who does not worry that his father would think less of him for not acting that way. Let's go to Tasha, calling from Louisville, Kentucky, listening to WFIA. Tasha, what do you think?
I'm very disheartened to know that some wouldn't regard the whole notion of women and children first, because I would be very heartbroken if my husband and I were in a burning building and he'd jet out and leave me in the building. And I'm very frightened as a mother for my daughters, because I don't know where society is going to lead us here and what type of men we're bringing. So that's where I stand.
Tasha, I got to tell you, if I could have asked for just the right word to bring a conclusion to this conversation, I can't imagine it coming any better and more classically articulated than you just did. I love it coming in your voice, and I love the way you put it. Tasha, I got to tell you, when you said, I would be disappointed in my husband if he did not act rightly in this situation, you embedded an entire universe in that, which I think every woman out there, and I hope every man as well, hearing that goes, you know what? Tasha's right. Again, I don't think it's just social conditioning. I'm absolutely convinced that God put this moral knowledge in us for his glory, and we deny it to our great disservice and, of course, to the debasing of humanity as a whole. Back tomorrow for Intelligent Christian Conversation. Thanks for listening to the Albert Mueller Program. I'll meet you tomorrow.
Thanks for listening, and be sure to visit our website, www.albertmoeller.com. You'll find archives of past shows and other important resources. You can also email your questions and comments. That's www.albertmoeller.com. Be sure to join us next time for the Albert Mueller Program, your place for intelligent Christian conversation about the issues that matter.